Our Bible reading for tonight comes from Isaiah chapter 7. If you find it useful to follow along and you're using the black Bibles in the pews in front of you, you can find it on page 681, and it's also in the handout that you would have received as you came in through the doors. When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, the king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son Shear-Jashub, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road to the washerman's field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smouldering stubs of firewood, because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and of the son of Remaliah. Aram, Ephraim, and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah. Let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves and make the son of Tabeel king over it. Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says. It will not take place. It will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is only Remaliah's son. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. Then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of men? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. He will eat curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. But before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. The Lord will bring on you and your people and on the house of your father a time unlike any since Ephraim broke away from Judah. He will bring the king of Assyria. In that day, the Lord will whistle for flies from the distant streams of Egypt and for bees from the land of Assyria. They will all come and settle in the steep ravines and in the crevices in the rocks, on all the thorn bushes and at all the water holes. In that day, the Lord will use a razor hired from beyond the river, the king of Assyria, to shave your head and the hair of your legs and to take off your beards also. In that day, a man will keep alive a young cow and two goats, and because of the abundance of the milk they give, he will have curds to eat. All who remain in the land will eat curds and honey. In that day, in every place where there were 1,000 vines worth 1,000 silver shekels, there will be only briars and thorns. Men will go there with bow and arrow, for the land will be covered with briars and thorns. As for all the hills once cultivated by the hoe, you will no longer go there for fear of the briars and thorns. They will become places where cattle are turned loose and where sheep run.
All right, 7 o'clock. Good? Very good. I had the opportunity during the week to catch up with a successful businessman and get some coaching one-on-one because of an area that I needed to work on. And it happens that he also serves on the board of his church and is engaged in intense pastoring, coaching of his own pastor. And so as we talked, he told me a little bit about his church and how it was doing and how much debt they had and how they were about to enter some more debt. And as a result of that, they had a thing called key man insurance. I'd never heard of key man insurance before. So I said, what's that? He said, well, the church, our particular church, is growing because of the senior pastor we have. And so if he dies prematurely, we're gone. We're in the, in the bucket full of stuff. And so we've got key man insurance, and it's at a certain level so that if he passes away prematurely, then we get the money and we can pay off a fair bit of our debt. And then he said, we're about to borrow some more money, and so we're putting the pastor through some more key man insurance assessments, like medicals and stuff. And that meant a full medical. And then he did this, like we're having lunch, and he did this. He said, that means a complete rubber glove exam. And I could hear the snap, and at that point, I stopped taking notes. If he told me once, he told me three times that with a glint in his eye that his senior pastor had to have this full exam, and each time I could hear the snap of the rubber glove. Because I'm of an age, you see, and a particular aspect of my future is not all that attractive. And I know whenever I say that in the company of women, there's no sympathy whatsoever. I understand that. But there are moments when your future can rattle your cage. I was talking with my small group during the week. And somehow we got onto the whole art of communicating with different generations. And I just happened to say, well, there's a rule of thumb in the communicating business that you can communicate fairly easily to those 15 years younger and those 15 years older than who you are. And that's about it, really. And, I started to reminisce. There was a time when if I wanted to speak to high school students, I could just do it. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to translate anything in my head. I could just speak. They understood it. It was wonderful. It was a good time. Now, if I want to speak to 5 o'clock, then I have to get alongside Amy and Rod and Tim and say, I want to say this. How do I say that to 5 o'clock? And they give me some ideas and I translate it. It's a lot of extra work for me. And then I was reflecting with my small group that nowadays I'm finding a greater affinity with 8 a.m. Yeah, and that's what they did. And every congregation all day, I want to say, just giggled at that point. I say, thank you so much. There are moments when your future can rattle your cage. And you have to look at some way to cope with the future, or at least a way of seeing how to engage with the future so that you can do that with confidence. There's a European economic crisis looming. It is so of such a stature that the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank of Australia is saying it could be worse than the GFC of 2 years ago. Today we begin a series called Christmas Is. We want to see that God is working his purposes out, so that we can trust him come what may. The journey towards Christmas means that we'll be better able to know the story of Christmas, therefore be better prepared for the future and better able to live by faith today. So each week between now and Christmas Day, we're going to add another significant steel beam to the superstructure of Christmas. That will give us a sharper mind to deal with the issues that come up as they come at us in the future, and we'll be able to deal with them with faith and grace. But now tonight we're looking at Christmas is revealed, and we begin our journey in Matthew 1:23, where Matthew writes for us, "The virgin will be with child and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. These are familiar words, I think. And there may be images that come to your head when you think of these words. Images like gentle Jesus, meek and mild, who lying in swaddling clothes. And maybe you've got a soundtrack playing in your mind with Away in a Manger or some other carol. These images and the soundtracks are so familiar to us, and we will hear them again in a few weeks' time, that I fear that they breed contempt in our souls. It's hard to see beyond the babe in swaddling clothes. But this verse opens up a portal to a powerful reality that projects itself into our future to help us live in the present. And when we go in through this portal and when we see the reality, then we'll be able to build a faith and a confidence in God so that we can face the future come what may. Matthew 1:23 takes us back to Isaiah 7 that Leanne read out to us just a moment ago. So if you have a Bible, open up there. If you've got it on a phone or an iPad, look it up there. Or you can just open up the sermon notes and you'll see the passage there. In this passage, right at the very beginning, it becomes clear that two armies are setting themselves to invade Jerusalem. This is kind of like, if you will, China amassing its 1 million foot soldiers in Papua New Guinea, and Indonesia amassing its armed forces in Papua New Guinea with a view to invade Australia. In Isaiah 7, the country's leaders, it's fair to say, are a little more than concerned. We pick that up in Isaiah 7:2, where we read that the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. And then in verse 3 we read, "The Lord said to Isaiah, 'Go out, you and your son Shear Jashub, and meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct,'" and so on. And then in verse 4, "Say to him, 'Be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smouldering stubs of firewood.'" God is saying to Ahaz, "Stay focused, Ahaz. Keep your eyes on me. I know that there's two armies threatening to come in and invade your land, but stay focused. I will be with you. Just place your faith in me. Keep your faith in me, and I will not let them invade." And God actually challenges Ahaz a little at the end of verse 9 when he says, "If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all." And then to encourage Ahaz and the nation, God says to Ahaz in verse 11, "Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. Ask for a sign to show you, for me, so that I can show you that I can and will take care of this little problem to the north of your borders. Just ask." Now, here's a question for you, my friends. What would you ask for? What would you ask for? You're the Prime Minister of Australia. China is amassing its 1 million troops to our north. Indonesia are amassing their troops to our north. God says to you, because you're a Christ follower, stay focused, do not be alarmed, put your faith in me, and I will not let them invade. Ask me for a sign to show you that I will keep my word. What would you ask for? For me, if it was me, it would be like a few missiles would be really appropriate right now, along with an earthquake or two in China and Indonesia. And while you're at it, send a team over who know what they're doing with money over into Europe and sort that mess out. And with all of these things firing across their bow, I don't care what order you do it in, God. You can do Europe, China, or Indonesia. You can do Indonesia, China, or Europe. You could do all three at one. You're God. I don't care. Just send some missiles, send some experts, earthquakes and so on. Shoot stuff across their bow that sends a very clear signal. Pull your head in. God is on this team's side. I'd be happy with any of that. I'd ask for that. That's what you'd ask for, right? Give you some confidence. Well, what does Ahaz do in verse 12? "I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test." And you go, what the? I mean, it sounds pious. He's quoting Deuteronomy 6:16 at this point. "Do not put the Lord your God to the test." And it's as if Ahaz has flicked his "what would Jesus do" wristband to see, well, what would Jesus do? And it's like he looked into the future a few hundred years and saw Jesus in the wilderness being tempted by Satan. And God, Jesus says to Satan, "Don't test the Lord your God." And so you kind of think, well, maybe violence isn't the way to get a sign. Maybe that's not the way forward. And it's doing damage to my head as I think about this, because if that's the right answer, if the right answer is "I will not put the Lord my God to the test," then why does Isaiah get ticked in the very next verse? Verse 13, "Hear now, you house of David, is it not enough to try the patience of men? Will you also try the patience of my God?" What is going on? Sometimes you read the Bible and there's a bit of spiritual kung fu goes on. You miss a few things. You got to slow it down and think about it. I think what's happening is what I did once. I must have been about 9 or 10. living at Campsie, the other side of Sydney. And every Sunday afternoon, the Mr. Whippy van would drive through the streets of Campsie playing Green Sleeves for everybody to get excited about. And one particular afternoon, my father gave me 5 cents. Now, this is in the days when 5 cents could buy half the truck. So he gave 5 cents, a bit like if you got 10 bucks now to go buy an ice cream or two. So he gave 5 cents with the message, go and buy yourself an ice cream and the Choc Top and stuff, whatever you want, 5 cents. And what I did was I didn't go buy the ice cream. Now, my father discovered that. He called me aside and said, I gave you 5 cents to go and have a treat. Why did you not do that? Now, I repeated back to him words that he had said to us because he was a banker and bankers are always into saving money. So I said, I thought I'd rather save it. Do you know what I was really saying to him? I don't want anything to do with you. Ahaz, like me, rejected a gracious offer from our father. My father said, here, buy a treat. And I said, don't want anything to do with you. Ahaz was offered by God any sign that he would name, and Ahaz was saying, I don't want anything to do with you. He quoted God's words back to him in sort of like a faking it thing in an effort to flatter God and divert God's attention away. But as we read through the history books of the Old Testament, 2 Kings 16 and 2 Chronicles 28, we see that Ahaz did evil in the sight of God. He kept turning his heart to the gods of other nations rather than to his own God. In fact, he so worshipped the gods of other nations that he sacrificed his own sons to these gods. So he'd much rather lean into those gods than lean into the God of Israel. And so he did not want anything to do with the God of Israel. And so that's why he said, I will not put the Lord my God to the test. Now, God did say in Deuteronomy, don't test him, don't try his patience by whinging and asking for things that he didn't want to give them. But in Isaiah 7, God says to Ahaz, you pick a sign, any sign, take a sign, any sign at all, to show for me to show to you that I am serious about protecting my people. You pick any sign. And Ahaz rejected it. And I'm kind of glad Ahaz did. Because God gave a sign, which has been a sign for God's people ever since. God says to Ahaz through the prophet Isaiah, the Lord himself will give you a sign in verse 14. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. Now, at first, it doesn't make sense. You know, there's a baby with a long name. What's with that? How's that going to help? Do you take the soiled nappies and leave them in waste paper baskets to stink the enemy away? Or do you load dirty nappies into cannons and fire them at the enemy in the hope that they'll go away? Is that what you do? We need to take a longer look at this passage again. I'm going to start with the name, Emmanuel. There's a number of syllables, but there are two parts to the name, Emmanuel. It means God, El, with his people, Emmanuel. God with his people, Emmanuel. We're going to look at El first, God. Now, in Isaiah, from Isaiah 6 to Isaiah 12, there is a section. And so we've seen this one who's coming, a baby whose name is Emmanuel, and we read the rest of the section, we get an idea of what he is like. So if we look over at Isaiah 11:2, for example, we'll see a little bit of what this one is like. Isaiah 11:2, the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and of power, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth and with the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt and faithfulness the sash around his waist. And if this is a strong and powerful God who will judge things according to justice and righteousness, and he will also be the rallying point or the assembly point. Now, in our day and age, every building now and every place has got an assembly point. And in case you're wondering where ours is, should this start to shake and get a little bit thin and fire breaks out and lives are in danger, our assembly point is in the corner of our property over that way. And it's a sign, a green sign with white letters on it saying, because we're creative, it says assembly point. It's really clear where we should go. And so in the course of danger, we assemble there. That is a safe place. This Emmanuel is an assembly point. He is a safe place. Look at verse 10. In that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his place of rest will be glorious. This is Emmanuel. He will so establish his kingdom, so reclaim his people, that they will live in a kingdom marked with joy and peace and justice and righteousness. It will be a safe place. This is not simply a baby. This is the long-expected Messiah, the one who at the very beginning of our section in Isaiah 6, we see us seated on his throne. And the train of his robe fills the temple, and the seraphim and the cherubim sing in endless praise, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty." This is the sovereign God, the one who is in control of all things. And he is the sign that God can pull off what God says he will pull off. It's a bit like Evo at this point. Evo is a friend of mine. I was a friend of mine. And why do we call him Evo? We're Australian, his name was Evans, and he shortened things and put an O on the end of it. Evo, that's his name. When we were around about 13 or 14, Kung Fu and other Chinese martial arts came into Australia through the Kung Fu type movies. And I wanted to do Kung Fu. My parents wouldn't let me do Kung Fu, but Evo's parents let him do Kung Fu. Evo was a particularly exceptional sportsman, quick reflexes, wonderful athlete. In his doing his kung fu, he became such an expert at it so quickly, within a short period of time, 6 months, 12 months, he was knocking out his masters and throwing them around their dojo. One night, Evo's going out to the dogs with his dad and with his younger brother in Newcastle. That's where we were living at the time. And on the way out of the dog races, some 18, 19-year-olds started to pick on Evo's little brother. Evo's dad was distracted. So Evo thought he'd take things into his own hands. And so he walked up to the loudmouth and said, "You know, you really shouldn't do that." And the guy said, "You're going to stop me? You and whose army?" And the next thing that guy knew, he was on his back. Evo, with a punch no one saw, laid him out flat. Evo then walked to the others in the circle and said, "Who's next?" Evo's first punch was a sign of what he could do. Protected his brother, and it was also good to play football next to him, really. If anyone took to me, I had Evo on one side and a few other guys on the other side. Very safe being with these people. Jesus will come and establish things in such a way that it's safe to be with him. And we get to taste that now. And a young woman I met some years ago now, I heard her give a testimony. I spent some time with her. Her testimony is that she was gang raped about 15 years ago. But with the help of God's people, she continues to discover the refuge and the safe harbor that is Jesus. One day, she will experience full justice, total peace, and great joy. But for now, it's enough for her to know now that Jesus is the assembly point, the safe place. She knows that he has heard her cries. And she can live like this because she knows that the Messiah has come. Because the spotlight falls on him in Matthew 1:23. The virgin will be with child and give birth to a son, and she will call him Emmanuel. Jesus began to rally his people around himself at the cross. We know that. And 3 days later, when he rose from the dead, he showed himself more than capable of dealing with our future, regardless of what that future may be. So much so that the great apostle Paul would write in Romans 8, verse 31, "What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be Who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son but gave him up for us all, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things? This is Emmanuel. This is the heart of Christmas. With this Emmanuel, Christmas is revealed. This is a message for all of our family and friends whose names are under the pavers around our foyer. This is a message for the shop assistant who serves you coffee week in, week out. This is a message for your friends who may have come to a gingerbread house or will come to Cantata or to the Big Thing. This is a message for our colleagues at work. It is a message to what is supposed to be one of the most advanced societies on the face of the planet, which is ours. And yet at the very same time as being the most advanced, it's the most anxious it has ever been in its history. You see that in the increased drug and alcohol abuse and medication that takes place in our nation. And I can't help but wonder if the increase in such abuse is tied to people who turn their back on God, like Ahaz did. When you turn your back on Jesus, all you're left with is yourself. And self is not flash. Self is not able to cope with the present or the future, which is why people turn to substance abuse in order to still their restless souls. Self is not able to deal with the pace of life, which is why people deal to a substance abuse and medication. I should back that up a bit. There are some people who need to be on medication. They should be on medication. If your doctors put you on some, you stay on it and lean into Jesus. But I fear far too many in our country find it far too easy to get access to medication and drugs and stuff when really they don't need to. But they have nowhere else to turn, they think, and so they do. Jesus says to our city, "Return to me, and I will be Emmanuel. I will bring you safely home." He says, "There's no need to be anxious about life now, nor in the future." And friends, this is a message not just for people who don't know Jesus. This is a message for us, isn't it? Don't we need to keep hearing this message? Let me tell you the last half of my week. Thursday morning began with a phone call. David Smith from 8 a.m. dropped dead last night of a heart attack. I went into shock. Are you sure it was David Smith? Okay, 5 minutes later, I got another phone call. Little Darby died of cot death last night. A couple of minutes later, I got a phone call asking me if I knew the whereabouts of someone because they'd not been seen for a while as a result of their second marriage falling over. And when their first marriage fell over, this man was found in his shed playing with a rope. Friday, two funerals, one at Glenhaven Church, one at the Old St. Paul's, both at the same time, both for long-term members of our church. Thursday afternoon, Friday afternoon, I lose track of the time now, I got another phone call to tell me that another dear old sister from 8 o'clock lost her 104-year-old mother to death and was burying her on Saturday. In the middle of all of that somewhere, there's a child abuse sex case. And then there was just the normal run-of-the-mill stuff. I figure if I need to hear that Emmanuel is with me, I figure others need to hear this as well, don't we? Which is why it's important to look at the first half of this name now. Emmanuel, God. Emmanuel, his people. This is a reference to God's people have a particular characteristic which we pick up in Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 3, where we see the name of Isaiah's son, which is Shear Jashub. Now, this is interesting. Picture this. Isaiah goes out to the king and says, "King, keep leaning into Jesus. This is my son, Shear Jashub," which means those who lean into Jesus, those who return to Jesus, the remnant who return. Ahaz, keep your eyes on Jesus. Lean into him. This is my son. Lean into Jesus. Lean into Jesus. This is my son. Lean into Jesus. Those who lean into Jesus, come what may, are the ones who enjoy Emmanuel. They are the ones who enjoy Emmanuel. There is no need, therefore, for you or me to push for our rights. There is no need for us to speak about what the world owes us or what God owes us. God knows our rights. God knows if there's anything owing to us. And the bald statement is, there is nothing owing to you. God knows this because he's Emmanuel. He has things covered. And even if your rights are being trashed, even if they're being trashed, there will come a day when he will set everything right. And so, like Jesus, Emmanuel, take a leaf out of his book, who, when every one of his rights was being trashed, entrusted himself to him who judges justly. There's no need for us to turn to wine or beer or recreational drugs or for medication drugs. There's no need for us to turn to those for rest, but to turn to Christ. Now, again, I hasten to add, when I talk about medication, if your doctor's telling you, you do it, you take them and you lean into Jesus as well. But there's no need for us to get into substance abuse to find rest, but rather to turn to Emmanuel, who said, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my teaching upon you. Learn from me, for I am lowly of heart, and I will give you rest for your soul." Even if China and Indonesia do amass their armies, God's people do not need to turn to other gods or to themselves, but to keep focused on Emmanuel, which is what God's people have done for millennia. Just ask Christians from Uganda who endured the murderous rampage of Idi Amin in the 1970s. Just ask the Chinese, our brothers and sisters in China, who for the last 70 years have endured the murderous carryings on of communism. Even if the European markets implode and God's people are in the same position as other people in the economy, we keep our eyes on Jesus, which is what God's people have done throughout millennia. Just ask Christians from Ethiopia and Rwanda, or come with me to the prophet Habakkuk, back in Habakkuk chapter 3, who wrote this song. "Though the fig tree does not blossom, and there be no grapes on the vine, though the olive crops fail and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, though the economy is gone, though everything is gone, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Savior." Or come with me to Jeremiah, who in his great book, The Lament, Lamentations, right at the very center, the geographical center, the heart of Lamentations, he writes these words, "I call this to mind. Even though the armies have come, even though we have been sent into exile, even though we've lost everything that made us a nation, even though we have no income, even though we have no status, I call this to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. Because his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness, O Lord my God, to me." And as a result, the great apostle Paul says, "I am confident that nothing will separate us from the Lord our God. Not a thing, neither angels nor demons, height nor depth, life nor death, nothing will separate us from God and the love that is in Christ Jesus." When we come to this point, when we understand Christmas revealed, then we can sing a hymn that has been recorded by many. Some bands lately, like Audio Adrenaline, Jars of Clay and Cutlass, and Cutlass have my favourite arrangement at this point in time. It's an old hymn called "It Is Well With My Soul." The story of the hymn goes like this. Horatio Spafford wrote it after losing just about everything. In 1871, death took his one and only son. Later that year, he lost all of his money and all of his property in what is known as the Great Chicago Fire. 2 years later, his wife and four daughters were sent ahead of him to Europe on an ocean liner, an ocean sailing ship, while he was to tend to some business back in Chicago. While he was doing that, he received a telegram from his wife with two devastating words on it: "Saved alone." His four daughters had perished in a collision with another ship in the middle of the Atlantic. Sailing to be with his wife, when the ship got over the point at which his daughters lost their lives, the captain of the ship alerted him to that and he began to write a hymn. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to know, it is well with my soul.